Good evening, one and all. Yes, halfway through another week, whizzing through August. I'm telling you, I could swear I saw Christmas decorations in a shop this morning. It's getting like that. I mean, the schools at least, well, schools have only just broken up in England. They don't break up till the end of July. And, most everybody goes back first week in September, and yet there they are pushing, well, never mind just Halloween and Thanksgiving, pushing Christmas. But that's the way it goes. Things change in the working environment, and indeed they do. Though it's not always as quick as it should be, and it's definitely over the last 30, 40, in my case, 50, 60 years, I've seen definite changes. And obviously, in big companies and that, for instance, you have the ethics tests, not tests, ethics programs you have to go through each year and learn on stuff. But though things are changing, you still see in a lot of the business environment, racism and sexism and the stuff like that. Well, you see it, but who reports on it? Who actually, does anybody actually blow the whistle on these things? Well, my guest today, she has written about that. She was one of these people, along with two other people who co-wrote the book with her, to reveal the truth about systematic racism that goes on in America. I'm sure it doesn't just go on in America, but this is about America. I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Jackie Abram. Hiya, Jackie. How you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I say about the rest of the world and stuff like that, but America is. It just seems like a hot melting pot of such things. I mean, I know, in England we had in the 60s a lot of people from West India, the West Indies, for instance, came to England. We grew up, at school. I think at school, in my junior school, I had two people I can think in my junior school of colour, and then when I got to the senior school, it was like. Numbers had increased as we got that, and as time went on, we got more people, for instance, from Asia, India and Pakistan, Zimbabwe, as it was the other part of Pakistan at one time before it became Zimbabwe, all that sort of stuff. Being the Commonwealth, they were able to move into England, and that's how it went. A lot of Asian people, there's whole lots. I mean, for instance, after the war, go back even further, a lot of Polish people stayed over in England after the war, and there's over 5.5 million Polish people in England now. But as it went on, and now of course with the common market and stuff like that, you get a lot of people moved in from the Eastern Bloc countries and that. So London itself is a huge melting pot, but everybody seems to be a little bit more acceptable than they are in America. When did you sort of, was this as soon as you started working, you ran into this, or even before that time with the racism?
Well, I can tell you, when we're talking about systemic racism in the workplace, for me and my own personal experiences, Barry, I worked in corporate America for nearly 2 decades. And so if you can imagine for a minute, what it's like to, get a good job that allows you to live the American dream. This job you love, you are actually very good at, and you actually enjoy this job. And so you're able to buy a house, you're able to own a car, you're able to provide for your family and even have money to pay for your bills. And for the first several years, this career that you're building is going in the right direction. And then due to, it can be something very small, Barry, like a subtle change in leadership, where one leader leaves and someone new comes in. And
Exactly, yeah.
now all of a sudden you become a target. And the rug is pulled from under you, and now you are at risk of losing this career and this job that you've built. And so you're heartbroken, you're devastated, your career is derailed, and so you leave that organization and you go to a different organization, starting all over, you know, making a name for yourself, building a career, things are going well again, and then the same thing happens. So in my case, Barry, my career was repeatedly derailed over that two-decade period multiple times. And so as you keep building a career and you find yourself having to start all over for no other reason than because you are Black,
right,
it's devastating, and it carries a lot of racial trauma that you endure as you now have to pick up the pieces and, you know, figure out how you're going to provide for your family. And so it's just really devastating. And, you know, that was one of the reasons I was prompted, along with my two daughters, to talk about systemic racism in the workplace, Barry, because very few people outside of our Black and brown communities really understand what it looks and feels like.
Right. I can relate a bit to that, obviously not the racism part, but I, up until September last year, I was working for one of the top medical companies. Begins with the letter C. That's about as far as I go. And about two years or so ago, they took over another company that supplies all their physical tablets, etc., to most of the medical trade. It was a good bit of business, because no matter what the other companies did, you know, if they got taken over by, you know, like CVS or Anthem, etc., they all came to this one company to physically get their tablets, etc. And so we took this company over, and they brought people in from this other company. And this other company had one thing. They did pharmacy. That was it. The company I worked for was global. We not just did pharmacy. We did insurance. We did medical. We did facilities. We did, you know, there's seven or eight different lines of business. It just so happened that when they imported people in from this other company, in my area, all my direct line of management became from this other company. And what happened was, this other company is in middle America, not on the East Coast where I am, so the wage was a little bit lower than us on the East Coast. Well, unfortunately, they just couldn't understand that the business and what we did. And then they found out that we were earning more than some of the directors, and the top four or five people within the area were allowed to be let go. You know, we got a small package, fine, doesn't help though, allowed to let go. Because,
right,
you know, myself and two of my compatriots, we were, you know, between sort of 50 and 65. You don't get a job at that sort of thing. And it wasn't a case of the what we did was bad. In fact, quite the opposite. People didn't want us to go. It's just that these people decided that, hey, we can't have people earning more than me as a director, so we've got to let go. Of course, what they did, they brought in cheap contractors, and by all accounts, these people just can't do the job that we do. I mean, we would do it 24 hours a day, getting calls, you know, covering and supporting the world. And yet the contractors, oh, I've done my hours, that's it, I'm not going to be available for be on the phone anymore. But so I understand being like that, and then losing, yeah, you know, not only just losing your work level, but all the friends and everything as well, which help, you know, you lost. But the fact is, at the age that I and my other friends are at, it's not as easy to pick up a job. Despite the experience,
right,
you know, ageism in America is even more rampant than racism in a lot of ways. I actually did sorry to go off a lot like this, but I did a test. I applied for two jobs, one where I put my correct age and one where I put a different age. The one where I put a different age, one I put the correct age, I sort of took some of my experience out, and the one where I put a younger age, the one I put the younger age, I took some of my experience out. And the one I put my correct age, I kept the experience in. And I got an interview for the one that had the younger job, but with a lot less experience. But nothing from the other one. Rampant ageism. Anyway, sorry to get on.
It's very sad, isn't it?
It is.
There's so many types of discrimination.
There is.
You know, and I agree with you. Age is another level of discrimination that, you know, it's just very sad what happens to people in their careers.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you weren't doing your job well, I could understand it. But far from it, you know, I'd had numerous awards and stuff like that, and right up from the managing director of the whole company had sent me a well done, you know, for being on a incident call for like 10 hours and getting it sorted, etc. You know, but anyway, enough. I get off my soapbox now. I mean, were you able, you know, to sort of go to somebody and say, hey, what's happened? Why have I been moved sidewards? Or why is this allowed to go on? Or was it the case that there was nobody you could speak to within these work environments?
Well, see, that's what makes my book Hush Money, How One Woman Proved Systemic Racism in Her Workplace and Kept Her Job, so powerful. And, you know, we're talking about America, but I have to tell you, I am being contacted by people in so many different countries, including the United Kingdom. I'm being contacted by people in New Zealand, in Canada, in the UK, in Nigeria, Uganda, Egypt, and also Israel, and they're all telling me that they're going through the same thing. And so that's why this book is so powerful, because what it does, Barry, is it actually takes the reader and it puts them into the shoes of a racial discrimination victim.
Okay.
To feel the full impact of racism.
Good.
In a real and modern way. And you know, it's important because, I mean, Barry, if you look at our modern books, television shows, and movies, they tend to focus on racism that occurred decades ago, you know, during a time where it was more overt, it was easily spotted.
Yeah.
Well, to answer your question, today's racism in the workplace is not like it was decades ago. It's morphed, Barry. It is hidden.
Yes.
And it is more covert.
Yes.
And it's much, much harder to prove. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. I mean, you know, the sort of calling people names and stuff like that, you know, people, as you say, it's not like open like it was. It's a case of, you know, when it comes to promotion or something like that, nobody knows, but somebody says, okay, well, perhaps this person might be better, but really it's, you know, it might be something else, but you can't see it. It's, as you say, COVID is a great example, naming for it.
And I'll give you an example. So I'm going to take an example right out of my book, Hush Money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Ebony was a black woman who, you know, was living in poverty, struggling financially, and more than anything, just wanting a chance to live the American dream, you know, where you can have an equal opportunity to get a good job, and with the income from that job, you can buy a house, you can own a car. You can have enough money to not only provide for your family, but also pay your bills. And then after years of working dead-end jobs, she finally gets a job in a reputable college. And so this is where she starts to experience racism in the workplace for the very first time. So here's an example. I'm going to show you the distinction between, you know, the overt, easily spotted racism and the covert, the hidden racism that it's become.
Okay.
So in Ebony's case, Ebony was given a promotion. And so you would think to yourself, well, this is not a company who behaves in a racist way, because they took this black woman, they recognized her work, and they promoted her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say you give a person a promotion, which is what happened to Ebony, but you deny her the training. You intentionally train her the wrong way. You deny her the resources. You put the situation in such a way where, because you're refusing to train her and the training that you are giving her is the wrong way,
you're
setting her up to fail. Now, if you have someone else in that exact same position who's not black, let's say it's a white person, and you give them the promotion, but you give them the correct training, you give them the tools, you give them the resources, they're getting set up for success. But in Ebony's case, you know, she knows that she's been trained the wrong way. She knows it's intentional, but how do you prove that?
Right.
That's where the covert part comes into play.
Yep.
It's more hidden. And so that's why, you know, you have a lot of people who end up facing three very impossible choices when they're dealing with racism in the workplace. You know, they either suffer in silence because they know they can't prove what they're going through, so they take it, they suffer, they're traumatized, and they just try to stick it out without making waves, or they resign because conditions become so toxic and so bad that they're losing their sanity in the process,
while it's
also affecting their mental, emotional, and physical health. And then there are people like Ebony, who after she suffered in silence and that failed, she considered resigning to keep her sanity, and that failed. She decided she would try to wait it out and maybe they would eventually leave her alone. But as you can imagine, that wasn't a good plan either, Barry, because these people who wanted her out of the organization started painting her out as an incompetent employee, sabotaging the work that she was doing, just doing horrific things, actually changing the work that she was turning in to try to paint this incompetent picture of someone who before that was an outstanding, above and beyond employee.
So they falsified her work. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Wow.
They falsified her work. And so because of that, you know, in her case, this is a young black woman who is a single mom. She's living in poverty and she's living with her mother who is battling stage 4 terminal cancer. You know, she can't afford to just walk away from this job because at $16 an hour, it was the most money she'd ever made, and she couldn't just walk away and go get another job. So she suffered a lot of trauma, and she went on a despair of considering suicide. She thought about killing herself because she didn't know what else she could do, but then she thought about homicide. She wanted to kill her boss because her boss is doing this to her for no other reason than because she's black. And and those are very real signs of racial trauma
that
you never really hear about, and they don't talk about in the diversity training.
Right. Interesting. I mean, I know majority of what happens, etc., is female and sort of ethnic race type thing. One of the things you said there about being trained on the wrong thing, that happened to my wife. She went to work for IBM, and as you can imagine, in IBM and in the IT, a lot of Indian people there, and they were meant to train her. So she could take an exam, an entry exam to see about working there, etc. And she did that for 3 months. And when she sat down to the exam, she found they trained her in all the wrong stuff. Because perhaps she didn't fit in reverse, if you like, with their thing. So it's just amazing how it can happen. One of the things I picked up is, and you immediately think this is a female type thing. But did you run into any examples of speaking to people about male people that had the same sort of issues placed on them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When my daughters and I decided to tell our stories, and, just to let your audience know, this is a story that is inspired by true events. And when we decided to start telling our stories from our black and brown communities, we did interview quite a few people. And unfortunately, racism affects both male and female. And so you just hear some of the most gut-wrenching, heartbreaking stories. People who had their careers intentionally derailed and for no other reason because they were a person of color. And so it was really important for us, having been through this, you know, like I started out telling you at the beginning of our conversation, you know, I am a racial discrimination victim. My career was derailed repeatedly. I lost everything, Barry. I lost everything. Mm. And I am still trying to recover
right.
from my own experiences.
But it's hard not to be bitter. Barry, it must be hard not to be bitter as well.
You know, you just want a fair you just want a fair chance.
Yeah.
And Barry, it's one thing though when you yourself are going through it and you know that you're suffering and you know that you have trauma and you're trying to cope as you lose everything and you are, you know, living out of a motel room with your two kids trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
But then when your children come of age and they join the workforce, Barry, and they start careers of their own and you start watching the same thing
right.
that you spent two decades going through now happening to your daughters, it just kills you. It absolutely kills you.
Mm.
And so this is why at this point in time we wanted to tell one person's story, because we know that there was a big shift in the way people think, Barry, right after the brutal killing of George Floyd on mm-hmm. national TV. And people were more open to hearing about systemic
yes.
racism.
Indeed, yes.
And so that's why when the conversation started, we wanted to add our voice to the conversation, because we know that there's systemic racism in the criminal justice system and in the police departments. We know that there's racism in the medical facilities and the hospitals. There's systemic racism in so many areas, but the part that we felt we could be most impactful in adding our voice to the conversation is in the workplace. And so that's what my book, Hush Money, How One Woman Proved Systemic Racism in Her Workplace and Kept Her Job, does. For anyone who's wanting to get a deeper understanding of what racism in the workplace looks and feels like for our people of color, this is a great book to put you in the shoes, and you're going to learn so much,
and that's
you're
a,
going to feel it.
That's a big thing. I always believe in sort of educating people by putting them in the shoes, being it a fictional novel or what have you. It's a lot better to put, you know, just say abuse or a handicap or, you know, recovering or death or, you know, sexual assault, whatever, and put that in a novel. People read it and they put themselves in the position of the person in the story. They can relate to it. And I think, you know, from what you're saying and what you and your daughters, was it Deborah and Delilah, have done, is that in your book, the Hush Money book, you've done that. People do this, feel like they're in that person's shoes. They can relate to them, or they can, you know, see what these people are going through. And I think that's great that you've managed to do that.
Well, I'll tell you, Barry, that you know, our book was officially launched only 4 months ago, but it already has 98 reviews on Amazon with
right.
a 5-star rating. And the theme is really clear. You know, this book is appealing to three different groups of people. You know, for people of color who are currently dealing with racism in the workplace, they see my book, Hush Money, as a survival guide that teaches them how to create unconventional weapons that most people would never think of in a million years, to fight the racial discrimination, survive the battle, and win the war against the racists who are coming at them in the workplace. But you know what's interesting, Barry?
What's that?
We're also being contacted by employers.
Exactly. I was going to suggest that, but yeah, go on.
Yes. you know, I'm being contacted by many employers who want to take a look inward in their organization
yes.
to be able to spot that hidden form of racism, you know, because remember, it's not the overt racism you can easily see. It's the hidden covert racism in the workplace, and they want to be able to identify it so they can stop it. And so what I tell employers is my book is excellent for that because it's a cautionary tale.
Yes.
That shows the managers and the leaders in your companies what can happen as this book spreads like wildfire through our black and brown communities who are learning these unconventional and very effective ways of fighting back. They're adopting these methods that this woman, Ebony, used to prove the systemic racism and bring her organization to its knees. And then they're coming back to their companies and they're adopting these methods and using them. So if there is someone in their organization that's been getting away with that hidden, that more covert type of racism that's harder to prove, they are now at greater risk of being exposed because they will never know if one of their employees has read
it exactly, yeah,
and has adopted those strategies.
Well, it's been fascinating chatting to you. Could go on chatting for a while about this stuff, but time is beating us. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where people can find more about you and, of course, about your great book.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So once again, my book is called Hush Money, How One Woman Proved Systemic Racism in Her Workplace and Kept Her Job. It's $6 in U.S. Dollars on Amazon, which is about what you pay right now for a cup of coffee. And if you're someone who wants to really get a deep understanding of what systemic racism in the workplace looks and feels like, this is the book to get because it's going to take you on a page-turning journey. Mm. You will not be able to put this book down as you see everything that this woman, Ebony, went through and how she ended. And like I said, it's a page-turner. You can check out the reviews on Amazon, and you will walk away with a wealth of knowledge.
That's great.
I also welcome you to contact me. The best way to reach me is on Facebook. You know, just send me a message to my personal account, J-A-C-Q-U-I-E. Abram, A-B-R-A-M, and again, that's J-A-C-Q-U-I-E, A-B-R-A-M. You know, send me a message and let me know if you've had a chance to read Hush Money. Like I said, it's a 5-star book, officially launched a few months ago, already has 98 ratings on Amazon with a 5-star. So it's just a really great book that is spreading like wildfire.
That's terrific. Well, Jackie, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Really, really interesting. And I'm sure, as you say, a lot of people are going to read this book because it's needed and it's going to help, hopefully, as you intended, obviously, a lot of people. So thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. Jackie Abram, J-A-C-Q-U-I-E, A-B-R-A-M. And I've been talking to her terrific book, useful information, called Hush Money, How One Woman Proved Systemic Racism in the Workplace and Kept Her Job. That's the thing, isn't it? Well, terrific stuff. And I'm sure that sort of book should be in every human resources library for a start, let alone everything else, let alone even at schools and stuff like that. Really, really good book. Well, that's it for now. I'll be back on Sunday with my music shows from 5 to 6pm Eastern. We have an hour of those for the days. And the theme this week, and I haven't even created it, I'm going to create the show straight after this, is the Olympics. So think what music we can have for the Olympics there. And then after that, between 6 and 7pm, the Swinging 60s, all the music from the 60s. And then next Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be back with fresh books and a chat. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget. Make sure it's working.